ACEC is excited to announce that registration is now open for its fall conference taking place in Marco Island, Florida, this October. That's right, after a year of Zoom and virtual meetings, we're excited to be bringing our fall conference back as an in-person event. And we can't tell you how excited we are to look forward to seeing you there in person for all of the content, networking, and education that the fall conference is known for. Log on to www.acec.org for more information. We can't wait to see you there. Welcome to the Government Affairs Update from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Today, we are very pleased to bring you two experts when it comes to infrastructure to get some interesting perspectives on what's happening right now in Washington as the bipartisan agreement on infrastructure moves from the Senate over to the House. And I'm joined today by Secretary Rodney Slater and former chairman of the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Bill Shuster. Both are right now with Squire Patton Boggs in Washington, D.C. Secretary Slater was Transportation Department Secretary under President Bill Clinton. And Chairman Shuster, in full disclosure, I used to work with Chairman Shuster while he was chairman of the T&I Committee. Both bring extensive experience here, and I thank you both for joining us today on the programs. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
I want to start off actually with you, Chairman Shuster, because this is kind of an interesting situation we find ourselves in, because you spent a significant amount of time and energy as both a member of T&I and then also as chairman in pushing a long-term, you know, substantive infrastructure bill beyond just highway authorization. Yeah, how does it feel, you know, seeing this now to be so close to such a generational investment in infrastructure?
Well, I think it's good. The bill is large, $1 trillion. It has some real positive things in it, like, for instance, taking the cap off the PABs. Is one thing they've done. They've done some procurement reforms in it that's positive. And they've also put in a section, I think it's $100 million, that goes to states and locals to help them analyze big projects to see if it makes more sense to use the private sector dollars or to stay with traditional government programs. And I think that's a good thing, because I think they're going to find in many cases, it may be a little bit cost higher up front, but when you get the private sector involved over a period of time, it usually drives the cost down, because the private sector is very much focused on that. Mm-hmm. They did some things in there that I wish they would have eased up on it. Some of them, they put some regs in there I believe it's going to make it a little more difficult to build roads and bridges because of some of the things they put back in or increased. But I think overall, the fact that it's a bipartisan bill, it's got a pretty big number. It includes some things that haven't been traditional, like broadband, which I think is something that you've got Republican support for. I just wish my good friend Peter DeFazio, he wasn't able to get a bipartisan bill out of the House. And I think we've seen over the last 20, 30 years, that Secretary Slater knows, transportation bills, when they come out in a bipartisan way, they pass. And that's what we see in the Senate. And I think the House will take it up and pass it also.
Yeah. And Secretary Slater, I mean, what is, you know, looking at this bill and how expansive it is and how it goes beyond your traditional, you know, roads, bridges and high, you know, and rail systems and the like, you know, what do you think this means, you know, for the economy?
Yeah. Well, first of all, Jeff, I'm excited about the bill. I mean, it's taken them a long time to make Infrastructure Week something other than, you know, a tagline to a conference without the action to go along with it. And so I applaud the president. You know, I know the vice president was involved, and clearly other members of his team, Steve Ricchetti in particular, and the entire Congress for really working hard to pull this off. Now, I say the entire Congress, so I'm being cautiously optimistic here, but I think with the momentum built by the action of the Senate, that's a real possibility, and I'm excited about it. I echo the sentiments that the chairman noted about the differences in this bill as relates to bills in the past. You know, this focus on broadband is just essential in this day and time, and especially in this post-pandemic era that we're trying to bring online. But I also applaud the leaders for really giving us a bill that has a lot more resilience focus to it, sustainability focus, dealing with some of the climate challenges we face, and then issues as relates to equity. And so I mm-hmm. think that it's a bill that is future-oriented, future-leaning. There are those who might argue that more needs to be done. Clearly, Democrats and any Republican that might have that belief will have an opportunity to deal with that with the other measures that are being put forward. But when it comes to really doing something that is akin to what we've done in the past and then sort of building back better, I think that this is an answer to that challenge.
You know, Secretary, you bring up a good point, because one of the words that's been used a lot is the question of resiliency. And it's just not resiliency against extreme weather, but it's also resiliency for critical infrastructure against external threats. I mean, we're seeing sure. a significant increase in the number of, you know, cyber attacks on computer systems and also just critical hard infrastructure. And Chairman, you'd also did a lot of work, you know, at TNI on pre-disaster mitigation, getting the dollars there and getting things done before the next storm hits, before the next tropical storm turns into a hurricane. Do you think the bill does enough? If not, do you think that what do you think needs to be done in addition, you know, to really what we're looking at here in this bipartisan agreement to really strengthen our infrastructure? Let's start with Chairman. I think you're muted.
I think the bill does a good bit in it to help with resiliency, which, you know, as we were talking about back on the committee of how do we build things before they, you know, collapse or a hurricane blows them down or whatever the case may be. And at the end of the day, you save money by building these things stronger, being able to withstand a catastrophic weather event. So I think it's positive. I think that you know, there needs to be more streamlining to get these things done, because I feel that as we did in the past, we run into these hurdles to build these things faster and more effectively. But I think overall it's a positive thing. And is it enough? Probably not. But it all depends on what the hurricanes and the tornado seasons and the earthquake seasons and the fire seasons over the next coming years looks like. But I think it's definitely a step in the right direction.
I agree with that. And Jeff, if I may, I think that the members of the council really have a big role to play here. I mean, this is not something that's across the finish line just yet. But, you know, engineering companies that are in the business of giving us the kind of system we need and deserve going forward, actually spending the resources in a proper way. You have a lot to say about this bill, about its, people may say shortcomings. I just think it's to be applauded, the fact that we've gotten it done. There are other things that could have been done, maybe a bit more here or there. That can be done later. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't allow the perfect to sort of distract us from the good. And this is a good start. And when it comes to the issue of you know, security and cyber concerns, I mean, there's a report in today's paper about the rail system in Iran possibly being attacked by cyber attacks. And then just a few months ago, a pipeline here in the U.S. and also a ferry system up in the Northeast. So we've got these issues to be concerned about. And I'm very pleased that we're starting to really come to grips with this, both the public and the private sectors, to do something about it.
Yeah, you raise a good point, especially with the rail system in Iran. I mean, as some of our larger firms and actually a lot of our medium-sized firms as well, you know, it's a question of designing the best infrastructure possible. And usually today that means, with the rise of, you know, AI, machine learning and the like, intelligent transportation systems, which are networked, which, you know, have to talk mm-hmm. to each other, that are open up to potential external threat. So the question is designing it in such a way where it's hardened.
Exactly.
And you're correct in the point that it's good that we're having the conversation. That this has to be, and also the fact that our firms are designing not for what is today, but what will be 20 right. years, 30 years down the line. The bridge is going to last 100 years, or the building on a shore that's going to potentially see a sea level rise or erosion from the beach. Mm-hmm. And those are all things that of course our members are very concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I guess on the question of pay force, because this is something which is interesting, because when we got the framework and everybody was wondering, okay, how are we going to pay for this thing? And then through the debate and the amendment debate, you know, they really considered everything from unspent COVID dollars to, you know, changing regulations on reporting requirements on cryptocurrencies. But what wasn't really talked about a lot was the user fee. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, Chairman Schuster, I know, you know, from my experience with you, it was always that simple, very basic argument of saying that if you use the roadways, you should pay into keeping them in good repair, and that user fee consideration. Secretary Slater, you were with the Clinton administration. Of course, that was the last time the gas tax was actually addressed. It seems like we're getting further away from the idea of that user fee model. What do you both see as the future of infrastructure funding? Chairman, you know, where do you see things moving?
Well, I think it's, first of all, look, we made a mistake when the Republicans controlled the House in 2005, I guess, when we passed Safety Lou. When we were doing this big tax bill, I, you know, went to the leadership and tried to convince them, instead of giving the average American a $2,000 cut in their taxes, let's do $1,800 or $1,750 and deal with the gas tax, because that is a user fee. And again, I think they missed the opportunity here not to do the user or the gas tax forever, but to do it for a period of time that they can't implement something that's different. And that would be a miles travel tax.
Yeah.
And they expanded the pilot program, but I really think they, we're going to be dealing in 5 years with how are we going to fund the next transportation bill. And with this bill, they had to backfill the highway trust fund shortage of like $120 billion. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's going to just keep growing. I believe as a conservative that, as you pointed out in the beginning, if you're going to use the system, you need to pay into the system. Mm-hmm. And I'll just say this for rural America, where I come from, the average, every dollar that a rural community puts in, they get back about $1.70. So it's a pretty good benefit for rural America to see roads and bridges being built across their interstates being built across their communities.
And we also saw last year the number of states that took it upon themselves to increase their own state gas tax, that state after state, you know, did something to improve the amount of revenue that was coming into their own coffers. And no one seemed to pay that political price that everybody expected, that idea, that boogeyman of saying, if you raise the gas tax, you're going to lose an election, at least the state level, never actually materialized.
Yeah. Good one.
I was going to say, I think that number's up to about 35.
Yeah.
That have done it. And then the real test case was California 2 years ago. I guess it was 2 years ago. Was it? Less than a year, I guess it was a year ago, they had it on the ballot. Mm-hmm. And they rejected repealing the gas tax, something like 57 to 43. So, you know, people understand they want their roads and bridges to be uncongested. They want them to bust their tires, break a tire, damage their vehicles. So I think people get it if you pitch it in the right way.
Yeah. You know, I agree with the chairman on this. And I would say, I was thinking about actually Kentucky, Arkansas, some of the other Southern states in particular, where Southern governors, you know, have stepped forward to move these measures. I was pleased to hear about the reference to California. I mean, I think it makes the case that it's happening across the country. I would offer this in defense of the Biden administration in this regard. I think what the president is attempting to do is to sort of rebalance things. He recognizes that there has been this inequity in the system where, frankly, the burden of progress is placed on the shoulders all too often of those who can, you know, either least pay or have the hardest time paying. And I think what he's trying to do here is to say, look, we're not going to raise the tax burden of anyone making less than $400,000 as a couple. That's pretty significant. And so he did not want to raise the gasoline tax for that purpose, did not want to go with vehicle miles travel for that purpose. And I think where he finds himself at this point, it probably is a policy that is a good one. Now, I don't think that it closes the door always to an increase in user fees. I think it probably sets it up where it, at a time in the future, it'll be a lot fairer to maybe do some of that. And I see that time coming, but I can see why the president would want to, at this point, have significant lines in the sand about what he would and would not want to see. And then, you know, frankly, keep his powder dry when it comes to negotiating at an endpoint where, you know, you have to find closure on these things. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's a pretty good position to take. I will note this, too, that, Jeff, you're right, that during the early days of the Clinton administration, the gasoline tax was raised. But the president would note that he made the case that it should be raised to deal with the deficit, to put our economic house in order, in balance. And then 4 years later was actually when we had the resources transferred from the general fund to the highway fund so as to take advantage of that 4.3% increase in the gasoline tax. Mm-hmm. So it was done in a two-step kind of fashion. And it may be that with the passage of time, we may get to a point where we can support more funding for infrastructure through user fees. I agree with that. But I also think we should test any number of other options too. And I know the chairman agrees with this because we've talked about things like an infrastructure bank. We've talked about other public-private financing techniques. I mean, putting it all on the table and then selecting those that best fit the moment is the proper course, I believe.
You think it seems like today with the amount of innovative financing available that there are a lot more opportunities to break away from the paradigm of just a simple, you know, either a lockbox highway trust fund or just always pulling from the general fund, to instead look at other options, P3s, whether it's it's capture or that investment, the reinvestment of potential, you know, I forget exactly what it was called, Chairman, but it was something that you were talking about when you were chairman. It was when we bring somebody in to buy something or to lease out an airport.
Asset recycling.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yes. P3s or asset recycling, something like right. that. You know, does that in your conversations with people in government and out, is that something which seems to be gaining some traction?
Yeah, I think you're always going to have some kind of a governmental component, whether it's the Fed, the state, putting money into it, because these deals, you know, we're seeing around the Beltway around Washington, D.C. I think the Virginia invested about 20% of the money into it to get a cost down where they wouldn't have enormous tolls on those hot lanes or fast lanes. So I think there's always that component that will always be there. But I think, yes, looking at things like an infrastructure bank, and because we look at an infrastructure bank, we've been pushing this during this bill. They almost had a piece. It was a very scaled back version of it. It was a infrastructure financing agency. It was small, and they finally pulled it out at the end, unfortunately. But I think, you know, folks in your community, the ACEC, mm-hmm. They deal with these TIFIA and RIF yeah. programs. And every time I talk to a contractor engineer, they tell me it takes 14 to 16 months mm-hmm. to get through this process, and it's painful, and it costs them a lot of money.
Yeah.
And so I think having a true infrastructure bank based on what the Federal Home Loan Bank, it's a real bank, it's independent, chartered by the federal government. They can make loans in 90 to 120 days if it's a good project or not. And it's only going to be a component of the, just like a P3 is a component of the financing package. So I think it's time for us to really look at these other ideas, asset recycling, where it makes sense. And again, as the secretary said, what comes next is probably a vehicle miles travel, but we've got all kinds of barriers and hurdles because folks don't want somebody tracking them. But as my son, when he was in his early 20s, so he held up his iPhone and said,
yes,
they're tracking you already, Dad. Yeah.
Every moment of your day, you're being tracked one way or another.
And Jeff, can I just say this? I should have mentioned earlier that even when we increased the gasoline tax, and the chairman's father was actually in the Congress along with former Secretary and Congressman Norm Mineta. I mean, Jim Oberstar. I mean, just a wonderful group of individuals on the House side. I mentioned the House because I want to put the heat on the House to do what the Senate has done. Exactly. But they also really gave us tools to create some of these innovative financing programs. The chairman mentioned the TIFIA program, the RIF program. All of that came into being at that time. And again, it was because of a good piece of legislation that gave the federal highways and federal transit and all of the Department of Transportation and others, Treasury, the ability to work with the private sector to gain insights about how we might fashion programs that resulted in those programs. I think that there are likely to be some measures that can be used in this bill, even though, you know, it may not be as clear now, that will help us to tap some of those private sector dollars and the private sector ingenuity that you just have to have as a part of an effort like this. And I think ACEC can be a really big part of that effort going forward.
That's a really good point. And thanks for bringing that up, because that's something which, you know, our members need to be pretty strong advocates for this, and they need to take their own experience from the private sector work, working with public sector clients and explaining, you know, how they can be more efficient. And that's one of the things we always talk about, qualifications-based selection. It's kind of that idea of saying that.
I like that.
Do it on qualification. We are
rather than just the lowest price.
Exactly. Right. Qualification over cost. Secretary Slater, let me ask you, as a former secretary of the Department of Transportation, you know, right now, how would you rate the job that Secretary Buttigieg is doing on selling the agenda?
Well, I don't think it could have been expressed better than in the Post today. That was a love piece, although I thought it was balanced as well, because it's all teed up. He still has to deliver. And he and I've talked about that, too. I said, you know, it's great to have a president who's talking about infrastructure. It's great to have, you know, the kind of team that you've got with Polly Trottenberg and others there to help you make it happen. But at the end of the day, you got to make it happen. And I thought what was very telling in the article today, and this is what I really want to underscore, is the way that he's made himself available. I mean, to Republicans and Democrats. This was actually, I thought, set up in his hearing, where there were so many members who, you know, they had their issues with him, and they, you know, they would take him on. I mean, that's the responsibility, I think, of the Congress, to test the administration. That's what our three branches of government, separation of powers, that's what that's all about. But then almost invariably at the end of the round, you would have a member saying, and I hope that you will be able to come to my state. I know that the chairman has had that experience, and to have a secretary or a member of the administration say, not only am I willing to do it, I look forward to doing it, so that we together can be on the ground with your constituents looking at challenges you face. That's what really gets a member's attention, and that's what gains their respect, I believe. And throughout the article, you could just see just any number of people mentioned in that way. And you know that they don't all agree on everything. And so I think that he is doing a tremendous job. I think that the article was correct in saying that there was always the likelihood that he would be in the president's cabinet or a member of his team were he selected, because of the endorsement and the warm endorsement that he gave to Mr. Biden at a very critical time in his campaign. And then the president saying just off the cuff that he reminded him of his son. I mean, all of those things sort of lining up. And then it was noted that he had some interest, but, you know, the president gets a chance to choose. And he said, look, I think that you can best help me and help the country serving in this capacity. And I would say that the that the former mayor, Mayor Pete, now Secretary Pete, has not disappointed. I'm very, very pleased with the way he's gone about his work. And I think all of these relationships, they're going to pay dividends in the short term and the long term. And they'll pay dividends for him, for his team, and clearly for the president as well. And so I'm very, very pleased.
Chairman, I mean, you've worked with a number of secretaries during your time in Congress. Where would you put them?
First, I think the Secretary Slater is right on target, saying I think he's done a pretty good job. He's measured when he speaks to to the media. He's not throwing bombs out there, which I think is important, especially on an issue like transportation and infrastructure. I think he's obviously bright. I think he demonstrated that in the debates. I was always impressed with him. Didn't always agree with where his policies were, but mm-hmm. He's smart. He's young. Hopefully that makes him want to think outside the box.
Exactly.
As to Secretary Slater's point, you got to get it done, man. It's great. You're going to have a bill here, but you're the guy that's going to have to make that apartment start to hum. And I think, too, that, and this is, I forget who said this, it might have been Secretary Slater or maybe Secretary Skinner, said this is the first time that I can remember that the Secretary of Transportation was a presidential candidate.
Yeah.
So he's got his own platform of followers that are saying, hey, Secretary Pete, we love the guy. We were with him when he was running for president. So I think that gives him a whole different platform to be able to get out there and go around the country. But to Secretary Slater's point, he's absolutely right. Going to members' districts, talking to members, I think that I've heard from a number of the at least the moderate Republicans that said he's great, had great access to him. He would call him up. He would, talk through the issues that what they thought were important. So I think that's really important. I know Secretary Slater did it. I know Ray LaHood did it. Through the years, I know Sam Skinner, when we had him on a conference, he said he sat down with a member's leadership of the House and the Senate in different committees once a month and had breakfast with him. So he stayed in touch with him. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important.
Yeah. And I mean, if he does land this, and he, like you said, he gets it done, he's going to be sitting on, I mean, Jeff Davis from Eno kind of did a rack up on Twitter, and it seems like he would have in competitive grant funding, the amount will be quadrupled over what has been in the past, almost about $24 to $33 billion, depending on exactly what gets through appropriations. I mean, that's a massive war chest to sit on. That's a political weapon as well. And I think you made that point. Being a former candidate, he's young, he's got aspirations. For the secretary, I mean, what advice would you give to sit on that record amount of competitive grant funding?
Well, I would say it a little differently. I would say, Jeff, don't sit on it.
spend it, definitely.
I mean, and I would agree with you. I would agree with the secretary.
That's right. All of the meetings up to this point where you go out and you say, oh, my, this would be a great project to fund. That's one thing. When you can go back a little later with all of those resources and say, this is a great project to fund and we're going to fund it, that's a lot better.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you basically say, I'm here with the congressman who is going to make an important announcement today, because it's all about continuing to build those relationships. And I think the secretary is going to really have a wonderful time with members of his team doing just that. And frankly, I think he'll be creating opportunities really for the president, the vice president, maybe even Secretary Granholm and others to do that same thing as well. Because the key is to not, it's not to sit on it, and it's also not to gloat in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all about really doing the business of the American people and getting everybody involved. And I think as a mayor, he's going to understand, a former mayor, he's going to just understand that instinctively.
Yeah. And Chairman, I mean, you were great at this. I mean, you made sure both as chairman and then also back in the 9th district of making sure that everyone at every level of government was included in those announcements, because to underscore the fact that everybody from county commissioner all the way up to member of Congress had a part to play.
Yep. Well, and that's the secretary's point with the department, the secretary of transportation. He may not go down to that granular, but when you're a member of the House, you need to go to the township supervisors and have them standing there with you, or whoever it is, because it's, you know, it helps everybody out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this is, as the secretary said, you get this stuff out the door. And I believe he's going to get it in places that need, like rural Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
If he does some good work in rural Pennsylvania the next time around an election, I mean, the Democrats win Philadelphia and Pittsburgh big, but if they can diminish how big they lose in the center of the state, then it's better for their candidates. And again, there's good projects out there for everybody to be able to, you know, participate.
Yeah. And Jeff, before we go on, I just thought about this. I do think that Senator Schumer should be given some credit here as well. And I think it was very significant that you had, 19 Republicans, including the minority leader. I just think, majority leaders Schumer and minority leader McConnell, I just think that they deserve a lot of credit here. And I know when the chairman was in office, these were the kinds of victories that you really relish, where it was not just the chairman, but it was the ranking member and, the other members of the committee and leadership and really down to the last person coming on because of seniority, coming on the committee. So I think that manifested itself on the Senate side as well. And look, you've got that Brent Spence Bridge in the Ohio, Kentucky area on I-75 that's going to get some attention now, much needed attention. And that's very important to the constituents in that region. Right.
And it won't be lost on anybody that Rob Portman was the chief negotiator from Ohio.
That's true.
No doubt about it.
And he's from the southwestern Cincinnati area.
That area.
So. Yeah, yeah. And well, we were honored at one point that he was a member of Square Pat and Box too. I think we should say that, years ago.
There we go. Well, I have two more questions. I have two final questions. One, I want to ask the chairman, because it's now we're looking at the House. We've got the Invest Act. You made a point that it wasn't as bipartisan as previous bills have been, at least on the vote total coming out. There's some argument of being made about, okay, take the Senate bill up and just get it done. Your experience working across from Chairman DeFazio for a number of years, I mean, he's been very vocal on some areas of policy that are not in the bill, dealing with climate, also dealing with resiliency. Do you see him letting leadership kind of move this forward, or without the opportunity to amend it? Or do you think he's going to want to have that formal conference? He's going to want to have the opportunity for the House to put its stamp on it.
Well, he's already given up on a conference because he realizes you go to conference, this thing will never get done. So I think it's going to come over. I think there's the potential for being a couple of amendments, but they're going to be very few, and they've got to be something that's agreed to by basically the 69 senators that voted for it. So it can be things that, are correcting things that maybe the Senate didn't do right, because that always occurs.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you're going to see anything major. And I think Chairman DeFazio is going to now focus on getting more dollars to put in these different areas that he has, that he supports very much. Yeah. And that'll be some of these things like resiliency and some of the climate change policies.
Yeah.
But he can't change the policy in a budget reconciliation, but he can plus up the money. Or take the money from one to another, but he can't change policy. Yeah. So I think he's going to be very focused on that.
And just a state of play question for you both to kind of round out the conversation. So right now, the current state of play in the House, Speaker Pelosi has floated a Dear Colleague letter, but essentially says that she wants to try to twin both the budget resolution to the infrastructure bill in the rules package, which means that voting on one is voting on both. That's gotten some pushback from moderate Democrats. How do you see this playing out? Do you think that it is going to be a twofer, or do you think that You know, there's going to be an agreement to allow infrastructure to go first and then the budget reconciliation. I mean, how do you see the state of play in the House coming at the end of the month?
I think she's in a very tough spot. She's got her progressives. They're saying they're not voting for it unless they vote on the big package. And she's got her moderates saying, we're not going to vote on that big a package. You need to pare it down. And by the way, we also want to vote on this thing. So I think she's in a really tough spot. She can't afford to lose more than, what, four votes.
Yeah, three.
So she's in a tough spot. And I'm not sure how to work out. I don't think it's going to happen. Well, I know for sure it's not going to happen at the end of this month because they're just coming back in the House to vote for the budget, which will pass. And then they're coming back September 20th. But I think if she's got this fight to keep them paired some way, somehow, you know, one goes first, one goes second kind of thing. She probably be, I would bet on Nancy Pelosi can get it done, but I don't think it's going to look the same.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of August as it does at the end of October.
Yeah.
For these two bills. I mean, the infrastructure bill is going to stay basically the same. Mm-hmm. It's how big the other package will be.
Yeah. You know, I'd pick up on the comments of the chairman in that regard. I think that if I were going to bet on anyone getting it done, I would bet on the speaker. But that doesn't mean that you cannot acknowledge that it's going to be a heavy, heavy, heavy lift.
Yep.
I just think that first of all, I think she took note of this. I don't think you can just dismiss the significance of the bipartisan vote in the Senate and the size of that vote. I mean, that was very significant. I didn't know that the numbers would be that high. I mean, I was basically counting on 10.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, 11, I mean, maybe.
11, maybe. Yeah. But that was it. I'd signal that they would, because I think the highest we got with those who were sort of saying, well, maybe, was about 11.
Yeah.
And so I think it bodes well for a number of things that are important to a number of people beyond infrastructure. I mean, I think you've got a criminal justice reform opportunity here. I think you might have something on voting. And I think that, the speaker has all of that to navigate and to balance and to negotiate. And I just think she ultimately gets it done, but it'll be very, very difficult. I'd also like to say, just in support of Chairman DeFazio, I think he's done a tremendous job as well. I think that his effort was necessary, even though it was a little partisan. And I think it cut against what his natural tendency was. I mean, and that was to work with your ranking member to kind of work through, you know, the process in a way that is, you know, institutionally sound and frankly, an effort, a way that he'd been a part of for so many, many years. But I think that what he recognized was that he had to really help the speaker in speaking to the progressive wing of the party in a way that would keep it engaged. And, and I think engaged is probably the best way to say it. And they are engaged. Now, you've got this process going now where the various, parts of the party will express itself, and she'll have to hear all of that, not dismiss any of it. And then carefully, bind it all together with, I think, the ultimate argument, and that is, don't let the perfect get in the way of the good. I really think that it comes down to that. And let us survive for another fight. And, it's acknowledged that some of that fight in the future will have her being supportive of others who will be at the helm. And I think she will say, look, stay with me. And, I've just tried to be as open as possible to make sure that all opinions are heard, all arguments are given an airing. And I believe this is the best we can do. And I think that's what it ultimately is. That's what the final question is. And then the votes are counted. And I don't think you take a breath until the last vote is cast, you know. So, and as the chairman said, it's a three vote. I mean, she's got three votes to
very narrow margin.
Yeah, that's it.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to be an interesting end of August. It's been an interesting August to begin with. I mean, we're
here. It has been. Yeah.
So let's get it done. Hopefully we can get this voted on and passed before the beginning of September. And that would be a great thing. So I really appreciate your time and your insight, because you've both been there. You've worked on these issues. You have great insight that I know our audience of member firm executives loves to hear. So thank you for taking the time, both of you.
All right, thank you.
Of course, Rodney Slater, former Secretary of Transportation, is a partner at Squire Patton Boggs now, and of course Chairman Bill Schuster, former chairman of the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee, and representative of the of the 9th congressional district, or the 9th as it were, before redistricting, a senior policy advisor at Squire Patton Boggs as well. And again, this has been the Government Affairs Update from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Thanks for being with us, and we're going to see you next time.